And the purpose of this net is to help new or current POTA hunters and activators to get on the air by sharing ideas, practices, and advice. As always, we ask people who are getting started in POTA to please review the information at the POTA homepage at parksontheair.com. All one word, parksontheair.com. And there's a lot of good stuff there. So that's the shorter and sweeter preamble. And I will let it drop here and start with the content. This is AB0O in Kansas City. Alrighty, well, if you missed last week's POTA PitNet, you would have heard a number of topics discussed. And what I did is I kind of summarized those topics into short one-liners just to catch you up on what was discussed last week here. So, let's see. The first one-liner is don't overthink your go kit and equipment. Just start with what you have in your shack and make changes and improvements from there. Experience is the best teacher for, you know, what to take on your next activation and so on and so forth. Same thing for if you're hunting. Whatever you have at your home station, start with that and then go from there. Number two, one-liner. Yes, you can activate a park using a satellite. We talked about that. Number three, yes, you can activate a park with a handheld on 2 meter or 70 centimeter FM. It's been done many times. Number four, there are as many different activating styles as there are activators. Don't let anyone tell you there's a right way or a wrong way. You do you. Number five, this question came up. All parks are needed parks. You know, the parks, parks in POTA are not like countries. There's not only 360 of them or whatever. There's almost 31,000 parks in the world, and almost 10,000 of them in the U.S. alone. So, with those kinds of numbers, if you activate it, you will have hunters looking for you. Don't worry about the fact that that park may or may not have been activated before or activated a lot. Everybody is going to hunt you regardless of what park you're at. Let's see. Number six, always research the park website and Google Earth the park before you activate. You should know what to expect, where to park, what the park looks like. And, you know, when you check the website, the park may be closed to the public. So check the website before you go out to the park. Let it fall here. Okay, so the other thing, too, is I got a couple of email questions at the conclusion of last week's net. And this is kind of how I'm going to do this. You know, there's a lot of topics, you know, there's a lot of stuff to talk about in POTA, so we can't possibly talk about all of it, you know, in a limited time frame. So I'm trying to get everybody's topics kind of pooled into subjects, and then I'll address those subjects, you know, as a whole. So anyway, but if you have questions, please feel free to email me at my email address that I have on qrz.com, and I will take those questions. So we had a couple of questions from last week. Email question number one. The person asks, are the yellow pins on the POTA map accurately placed? Well, my volunteer activity with POTA is coincidentally looking after the POTA map. So I would say that out of almost 10,000 parks, maybe there's 1% of them, maybe 100 of them, that are off location a little bit. And in some cases, the pin park is missing. And those stats are pretty good, considering the number of volunteers that have been, contributing to the map here over several years. You know, personally, I use the pins to pick parks, to kind of get an idea what parks are around. But I really research each park on the web before going out there, just so I don't get any surprises. Email question number two. The activator asked the question. He says, I went to a park and it was closed. why is the park pin still on the map if the park is closed? Shouldn't POTA remove the pin on the map if the park is closed? Well, maybe in an ideal world, yes, but quite frankly, POTA as an organization, of course, is privately owned and is volunteer powered. So it's just impractical and impossible, really, to scan, you know, 10,000 or 30,000 park websites each day, week, or month to kind of detect park closures. If an activator tells us and notifies us that, hey, you know, this park was open and all of a sudden, the state or the government has closed it for whatever reason, we can take it off the map. On the other hand, if the park is temporarily closed, we don't deactivate parks. If it's temporarily closed for renovation, for COVID, for flooding, we don't deactivate a park for that reason because there's really no way for us to tell when it's going to reopen. So once again, the activator, as the activator, you must research the park before getting there. And that sort of thing. And then one last email question before we get into check-ins here. The activator asked, well, I'm an activator, and last weekend was a contest weekend, so it was really tough to find an open frequency to activate. What do I do? Just stay home? I'll let it fall. So what do I do? Do I just stay home? Well, one of the things that a lot of people don't know about POTA is that any and all contacts with licensed amateur stations count for POTA. So when you're out activating or when you're hunting, any station you speak to that's a licensed amateur station is good for your log and counts towards your log for POTA. It doesn't have to be other POTA stations. So what I do on contest weekends is I go to the parks where, there's no cell service, so I can't spot myself, that sort of thing, because you really don't need to spot yourself at parks like that on weekends and contest weekends because, quite frankly, it's raining QSOs. So all you got to do is work 10 contest stations and bingo, your activation is successful. I'll let it fall here. Okay, so those are the topics that we talked about last week. So I got through those topics and the preamble here in about 10 minutes. Well, that's good. I'm making good time. So once again, if you have questions, you can email me at qrz.com, at the email that's on my qrz.com page. But like I said, like we did last week, as we go through the check-ins, I'm collecting topics as I'm collecting check-ins, so I pool those topics into logical subject buckets, and then we talk about each bucket in turn. This week we have two discussion topics that we promised. The first one is antennas. The second one is batteries. So without further ado, I am going to take the first rounds of check-ins, but this week, what I would ask is give me your call sign, your name, and just give me like two or three words, what subject you are wondering about. For example, I could check in and say, this is AB0O, my name is John, and I want to ask about antennas. So if you give me that, last week we took check-ins and I circled back to each person and asked, what are you wanting to talk about, that sort of thing. So I think we'll save some time by doing the check-ins, name or call, name, and then topic. If you give it to me that way, then I'll accumulate those topics, I'll tabulate them, and then we'll go on to the rest of the net. So anyway, on that, I will let it fall here. This is AB0O. Whiskey Zero Zulu Alpha Papa Rick in Overland Park. No questions. I'm here to answer questions. On the Kansas City Wide Fusion Wires X room. And I am John, AB0O, your host. And I would like to take check-ins at this time. So, like I say, if you give me your call, your name, and your topic of interest, I can take down your check-ins. Let's go with the check-ins. Please come now.
Whiskey Zero, Zulu, Alpha, Papa, Rick, in Overland Park. No questions, I'm here for answers.
Echo Zero, Yankee, Oscar, Alpha, and?
Kiko, Echo Zero, Yankee, Papa, Tango.
Austin and Wanda in Leavenworth, no questions, just checking in.
KE9BB, Jeff in Lenexa, Kansas here, and I don't have any questions at this time.
Kilo, Bravo Zero, Lima, Sierra, Mike, Brad, St. Joseph, no questions.
KE0, DSV, David, no questions at this time.
KI5RHL, Bethany, Oklahoma. Just picked up an FT991A, so I'm kind of curious what all band HF antennas some folks are using on this system.
Romeo Lima. No questions.
Kilo Charlie 3, Kilo Juliet Quebec, Rick, no questions. Mobile.
K3EPP, Mark, no questions.
Okay, let's see if I got it there. Okay, I just want to, I've got, let's see, I've got three calls that I'm not sure of. There was one call sign that was ending in Romeo Lima. Could you give me your full call again and your name?
This is November Zero, Romeo Lima. Name is Dave.
Okay, November Zero, Romeo Lima, Dave. Thanks very much. And then there were two calls that came very quickly at the beginning there, and I was... let's see, was it KE0, Yankee Oscar Alpha, and Yankee Papa Tango? Could you give me those two calls again, please?
QSL, John, you've got those down correct.
Okay, well, I'm better at managing a pilot than I thought I was. Okay, so let's see, running down the W0ZAP. Rick, we have a distinguished guest this evening, so I'll ask Rick to answer some questions. Rick is one of the directors of POTA, and we're pleased to have him on. And KE0YOA and YPT, and we have KE9 Bravo Victor, we got KB0 Lima Sierra Mike, Brad, KE0 DSV David, KF5RHL, and noted that you have a question about all band antennas. Good question. November 0 RL, we got KC3 KJQ Mobile, Rick, and K3 Echo Papa Papa Mark. So let's go for a few more check-ins and then we'll dive into the first topic here. Check-ins, please come now.
Whiskey 4 X-ray Juliet.
November 6 Uniform Tango Charlie.
Okay, let me see if I got it here. Okay, we got Whiskey 4 X-ray Juliet and November 6 Uniform Tango Charlie. All right, well let's stop the check-ins at this point. And again, if anybody wants to check in, we'll have a second and third and a closing. I got a second round of check-ins and then another topic, and then we have closing check-ins, and then. If you want to email me, feel free to email me at my email address on QRZ.com. Okay, so our first topic, as promised this evening, is antennas. Now, frankly, there's literally hundreds of antennas out there, so this topic could go, we could be here till Saturday going through each and every antenna. But we have Rick, W0 Fox Hotel, who I hope is, I think he's online or is listening. Rick has done over 250 activations, and there's, of course, myself. I've done over about 450 activations. So we'll talk about the antennas that work for us. How about that? And then we'll take some questions after that. Just to kind of peel the onion a little bit here, that being said, with the improving solar cycle, activators and hunters are going to find that you know, pretty much all antennas were going to work. So antenna efficiency, you know, while it's important at the low spot of the solar cycle, as the solar cycle is getting better, you know, the antenna efficiency is not as important or not as critical. So you can use pretty much any antenna and be successful. So that's the first peel of the onion. And the second one, you know, I had somebody ask me a question the other day. They said, well, should I spend as much as I can on a portable antenna? Well, POTA is, of course, we all like our portable antennas as portable as possible. And there's a growing crop of commercially made portable antennas. And I think I've owned, borrowed, used, or seen most of them. And one of the things I told that person, I said, well, you know, when you pay a premium for a portable antenna, what you're paying for is you're paying for the engineering that went into making it portable or compact or, you know, foldable, all that kind of stuff. You're not paying for, you know, you're paying for the engineering that made it foldable and portable. You're not paying for some fringe antenna science that makes a tiny antenna as good as a three-element beam. So, you know, the laws of physics still apply. You know, those antennas are really, really, they're nice. I've seen many of them. Like I said, I've used many of them. And they're really cool because they do, you know, they do allow you to pack a small antenna or an antenna into a small package. So, you know, but in this business of portable operation, you know, just a plain and basic dipole or a random wire or halfway wire will do very well, and it costs almost nothing in some cases. So you can be successful with, you know, a simple, inexpensive wire antenna, as well as you can be successful with a more costly, commercially made portable antenna. So anyway, on that topic, I'm going to let see if Rick W0FH is on. I'd like to ask him to talk about his antenna. He uses NFED wires on a mast. And I'd like for him to talk to us a little bit about that. Rick, are you on frequency? W0 Fox Hotel, this is AB0O.
Good evening, John. This is Rick, W0FH. And yeah, I'll be happy to talk about it. I had the good luck to, on my first try, you know, or with a good mentor. My mentor in the beginning was Jay, W0JD down in Harrisonville. Who had come up with a plan, and I kind of duplicated his, and it's been very successful for me. But one of the things, and I think John alluded to it, is you need to think about what kind of park you are going to or what the park is that you're going to. I have had, I know I've had Kansas State Park Rangers come up and ask me what I'm doing, and we've always had a nice conversation, and they said, well, you know, you're welcome here. Just, number one, don't throw wires up in trees and don't drive stakes in the ground outside of course, the camping area or the tent camping area. So that was something I really kind of took to heart. The other thing is how crowded is this park you're getting into? Are you staying in your car? Are you in a wall-to-wall car parking lot? Or is it like here in Missouri, we've got a lot of wildlife management areas that I've gone to and never seen another soul. So you've got a lot of options right there. Let me drop. What I did from the very beginning is I went out and I bought a 40-foot spider beam collapsible mast. This thing's about 4 feet long when it's collapsed, but extended, it's 12 meters, 40 feet up in the air. It's relatively lightweight, I think less than 10 pounds. I wouldn't want to backpack it very far. But I built a little plywood base that I drive the car onto that holds this mast in an upright position, and it's really sturdy. I don't worry about the wind blowing the mast over on the car. My antenna itself is nothing more than around 37, 38 feet of stranded hookup wire. The silicone hookup wire is nice. It tends not to kink and bunch up. So I've got a little loop on one end of that wire. I put it in the top section and stretch that 40 feet up in the air. Now, the magic happens at the bottom end of the antenna. I have an SGC automatic antenna tuner that sits at the base of the antenna. It actually hangs on my little plywood box. That lets me tune 10 meters to 160 meters with that antenna without ever having to get out of the car. And again, as John mentioned, your activating style, I'm not one to, you know, pick a frequency on 40 meters or 20 meters and call CQ until, you know, my ears fall off handling pileups. I go out and I hunt park to parks. I go out and I look for some VX since I can't work from home. So that situation works great for me. Let me drop. Now, with a vertical antenna, you're going to have some kind of a grounding situation or a counterpoise. And again, you can't drive a ground rod in the ground. So I use flex weave antenna wire. Again, it doesn't kink up. It rolls up really nicely. And I put down anywhere from 1 to 5 33-foot radials in a star shape around the base of my antenna. Again, that depends on, am I in a crowded parking lot? I try not to make it so that other cars drive across my radials. I had one interesting situation where there were some hunting dogs coming out, and these two rambunctious dogs got tied up in my radials and about choked them and about dragged my antenna down. So now I've got a quick disconnect on my radials. But if you hear people say, oh, you got to have 20, 40, 60 radials down for a vertical to work, that just isn't the case, I guess, if you have a good enough antenna tuner. So, as I said, that fit my style. That let me earn the POTA award called the N1CC award, which means I have contacts on 10 bands from each of 10 parks, which is challenging. You always got to go through a winter time period to get those 80s and 160s. You got to spend some time at night out in the parks. So that was probably the biggest challenge I've had. Let this drop. So that's the one I use 90% of the time. Now, you're going to run into parks where you have nothing more than a parking space on the street adjacent to it, or there's Shawnee Mission over here in the Kansas City Metro. There's 3 or 4 parking spaces in a little parking lot next to the building. And even putting up that antenna, although it has a relatively small footprint, isn't the best of ideas. So last Christmas, Santa brought me several ham sticks. I think I've got 10, 15, 20, 30, and 40, something like that. It was a package deal. A ham stick is a coil wound on a fiberglass rod for the bottom part, and the top part is a stainless steel whip, typically 4, 5, 6 feet tall. They're pretty easy to handle. My ham sticks sit in a magnet mount that I stick on the roof of the car and run the coax inside the car. And they work fine. They don't work as well as 40 feet in the air, but I've never had any problem finishing an activation with a ham stick. So they're always in the back of the car. If a situation comes up where, a park ranger says you can't put that big antenna up, you never argue with a park ranger. The ham stick goes on the top of the car, and you get the job done. So there's a couple of options. I'll be glad to answer questions anybody has about what I do. But John said it's worked for me. I've got close to 12,000 POTA QSOs in the log, and trying to finish up a work to all states with that. So back to you, John. Whiskey 0 Foxtrot Hotel.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Rick. Excellent. So I'm just circling back here. So KI5RHL, you were asking about all-band HF antennas. Well, there's a good one. That will do all bands, and the auto-tuner at the base of the mast will basically simply just tune the band that you key up on within a fraction of a second, or maybe a second or two that you key up. So That's a really good all-band antenna. All right, just briefly, briefly here in terms of what I use. What I use, I've been doing portable operations for probably all the whole time I've been a ham, so that's about 40 years now. And what it boils down to is I like dipoles and variants of dipoles. So what I use is I use a plain and basic dipole. And what I do is I have a mast like Rick's. I have a fiberglass mast, and I can lash it to a fence post, or I have a tripod that I use, or I have a trailer hitch mount that I use as well. But I have a fiberglass mast, and I basically tape half the dipole to the fiberglass mast in a vertical way. And then the second half of the dipole I string horizontally across to, you know, another post, or in some cases I've used my car as the attachment post. So really what I do is I have a regular dipole set up as a vertical L. So I got one vertical part and I got one horizontal part. And the horizontal part is not a radial. It's the second half of the dipole. So it's a regular dipole. One half is vertical, the other one is horizontal. And I have used that particular design on everything from 160 through 6, and it works well. 75% of my contacts on POTA, I've got 13,000 contacts or more in my log right now, and 75% of those are on 40, and 25%, 20 some odd percent are on 20. And then the rest are scattered amongst the other bands. But for me, I like dipoles. They're very efficient, and they're very cheap, and they work real well. One of my favorite dipoles is, as I've let it drop here, one of my favorite dipoles to use is a kit that I've purchased several of online. It's from a company called Pacific Antenna. It's a mom-and-pop company. They make them, you know, in kind of their basement and sell them. And basically, it's a kit. It's a 20 and 40 trap dipole. And, it's very inexpensive. It takes about half an hour to build it, and it works really well, and it weighs about 4 ounces. So, by the time I tape that with painter's tape to my fiberglass mast, it doesn't take me more than 5-10 minutes to set up my station and get on the air. So that's what I do, and it works. I will, let's take a few questions. Of course, we can't take all your questions, but let's take a few questions, one or two questions here, and see if anybody has any questions about what we just discussed here, Rick or myself. Go ahead with questions. This is AD0O.
This is? Okay, 0LBR, Steve on the desk. I do have two questions for you, John.
Okay, Steve, K0LBR, go ahead with your question.
They relate to your antenna, this Pacific antenna kit, the L shape. Does the direction of the horizontal L determine the direction of your broadcast? And what antenna are you using for 160 meters? Over. P0LBR, back to net. Thank you.
Okay, two good questions. So, the question is, that horizontal leg, you got to point it in some direction. So does that mean that the antenna is directive in that direction? Well, we've done some modeling, and actually Jay, W0JD, did it on EasyNeck for me. And, there's a little bit of, to use a pool table term, a little tiny bit of English directivity towards the horizontal leg. But, in the field, I've done the trial. Over hundreds of activations, I've pointed my horizontal leg to pretty much every direction, north, south, east, west. And I can't really say that it makes any difference on directivity. It seems to behave as a vertical an omnidirectional vertical. And on 160, well, I used the exact same design on 160, except that for 160, each of my legs is 50 feet long, with, and I have a coil in the middle of each leg that is a pretty big coil. I think the diameter of the coil is about 6 or 7 inches and has about 20 turns on it. So it's basically a coil-shortened dipole. The vertical leg is on a fiberglass mast, and the horizontal leg, of course, is horizontal. But the problem with that antenna, it works well. I mean, I've activated park with it. But the fiberglass mast is a spider beam 18-meter mast. It's a 60-foot mast, and that is a beast of a mast. So it's not something that I do. I don't activate 160 meters with it, you know, at the fall of a hat. That kind of is an event. So for 160 meters, I much prefer Rick's setup with the tuner at the base of the wire. And that answers your two questions. Back to you. This is AB0O.
Yes, it did. I guess then I need to ask him what he's running for that 160 meter, and I can get with him later. John, thank you very much for hosting the net. Great net. And appreciate it.
Okay, Steve, thanks for the question. Any other questions before we go to, let's see, a second round of check-ins here? Any other, one or two questions maybe, and quickies, and then we'll go to their check-ins. Questions come now.
This is GOP. I'm curious what the tuner is.
Okay, I must have stepped on you there. N0GRP, come back with your question again. I think you're on Echolink, we'll wait for you here. Come back with your question there. I didn't copy your question. This is AB0O.
Yes, John. I'm curious what tuner Rick uses. I think he said the model number, but I didn't catch it. Can he say that again?
Rick, can you fill us in on the... I know the answer, but Rick, can you tell us what your tuner is?
Sure, W0FH. I happen to be using an SG230 from the company SGC. And I'll be honest, I bought that accidentally. I really was going to put up a flagpole antenna here at the house, and that never came to pass. So the SG230 is a big beast, and the company is kind of on shaky ground right now. So I'm not sure I would ever buy another one from them, and I don't think you can get one right now anyway. If I were to do it again, I'd probably grab a Nikom AH4, or not a big fan of MFJ. I've not done a lot of shopping for them, and I don't know that there are others that would be able to tune 160 the way mine does, but that's what's on there. And to answer that other question, I can do 160 meters with 37 feet of wire. Now, a little RF gets back into the car, and but I've got, again, over 100 contacts on 160 meters out to 1,000 miles with it, so it does work. It's an SG230, W0FH, back to the net.
Okay, thanks a lot for that, Rick. Yeah, and I would second the motion. I've used SGC's tuners. I've had SG237s. In fact, I use a 237 here at my home QTH. Mobile or portable, I have a 239 that I use. And I've actually owned several 237s. They're really nice. Units. I, too, am not a fan of MFJ, but you know, if you get MFJ has similar auto tuners that function the exact same way. So if you get one that works well and you're happy with it, it will do the same stuff. All right, so I think what we'll do here in the interest of time is we'll go to our second round of check-ins, and then we'll get into the second topic here before we close out. So anyway, once again, give me your call, your name, and any topics you're wondering about. Let's go ahead with the second round of check-ins. Check-ins come now. This is AD0O.
Whiskey Zero Hotel Lima, W0HL, Dennis, Nevada.
Hello, from Salt Lake City. I do have a question about packable masks at the end of check-ins.
All right, any more check-ins before we go to the second topic there? This is AD0O.
Sure, this is Dave, K0DZX, Kilo Zero Delta Zulu X-ray in Merriam. Just checking in, really enjoying the net and listening to the great questions and answers.
John, this is W0FH. Just so everybody knows, if you go out to the Kansas City-wide Facebook group, I've just put a couple of links in there to the that Pacific antenna trap dipole that John uses and just a little picture of the setup that I use. W0FH.
Rick, this is W0ZAP. Also, Rick, and FYI, LVG manufactures a remote tuner that's weather-hardened. It's in a weatherproof case. It'll handle 125 watts, so it's good for most modern-day radios. And it's got 2,000 memories, and it'll tune 1.8 to 54 megs. So, and it's relatively inexpensive. It's about $250, something like that, is what I'm seeing for retail pricing. So that'd be an option to the SGC. W0ZAP back to net.
Okay, Rick, I think I stepped on you there. What's the brand name you're talking about, once again?
It's an LDG RC 100. It's 125. It'll do 125 watts, handle 125 watts, 1.8 to 54 megs.
Okay. Well, very good. Yeah, LDG, that's the remote model. So, yeah, I've seen one of those once upon a time. I'm going to go again. The call sign of the station that was in Salt Lake City. Can I have your call sign once again, please?
Sure thing. This is Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Bravo. I wasn't sure you heard me earlier, so thanks for confirming.
Okay, we got you that time there, and I made note of your packable mask question, so we can talk about that. All right, so I am going to dive into the second topic here, and we talked about what we wanted to talk about is batteries. And once again, you don't have to listen to me. I think we have Jeff, KE9 Bravo Victor, who told us that he has a number of batteries, generators, solar power stuff that he uses. Personally, I use a small bioanno battery about the size of a pound of butter, and that's as sophisticated as my power supply is in the field. But, you know, I'm at one extreme. All my station fits in a backpack, so, but that's how I like it. But let's go to, one comment about batteries here. You know, there's probably a lot of battery options and power supply options, as many as there are antennas, but the selection is a little bit simpler in batteries. And batteries, you know, you got two extremes. You got big and cheap, and you got small and expensive. I guess weight and cost are the two extremes there. You know, a good old car battery is cheap, it's rugged, but it's heavy. And but you know, you have on the other extreme, you got top of the line bioanno lithium iron polymer or iron phosphate chemistry batteries that are by far the most expensive ones, but they pack a lot of power in a small package. So obviously the amount of RF you want to run or how long you want to run in the park drives the size of your batteries. So anyway, let's see. Jeff, are you on, and would you like to regale us with a little bit of what you use in the field. The KE9BV, take it away. This is AB0O.
Well, good evening, John, and everyone on the net here. I had originally, when I started out in POTA and doing my hunting out there, I didn't have any batteries. What I started out with was just using 120 volts. So usually when I went to a park, I went to a picnic area that had power that I could kind of run directly to my power supply to power my radio. And it really wasn't until this past spring that I ordered a battery. I actually originally ordered the Dakota lithium battery, I think it was either the 29 or 30 amp hour battery, and that was on back order for 7 months and still had never come in. So I kind of canceled that order and spoke to them over to Baino, and they had batteries in stock there. So I did go with a 30 amp hour 12 volt battery, which is what I am now using in the event that I don't have electric available. It seems to work very well. They make a very nice product there. I did go ahead and purchase the 120 watt foldable solar panel, so I do have that option on there if my battery runs low. Most of the time when I'm activating, I'm only running usually 4 to 5 hours. The battery I bought, I just didn't want to have to charge it overnight if I didn't have to. So that's why I went with the 29 amp hour battery on there. But again, I've got the option to use solar as well. Most of the time when I'm activating a park, I like to rent cabins at them. And usually we'll go out there for 2 days and activate the same park. Different bands, different frequencies. All right, I'm going to let the repeater drop here. So, I mean, usually when I'm going out, I'm at least activating sometimes at 1 day, but most of the time I'll go out for 2 days. We like to rent the cabins in the wintertime, go out, spend the weekend at the park, and activate the parks that way. I do have the other option. I did purchase a Generac IQ3500. Not only just for POTA, but I did purchase that in case with these rolling winter outages that we seem to be going through every once in a while. I wanted the option to be able to power my furnace or refrigerator or whatever. So I did kind of go, it's a rather large and heavy generator, so it weighs about 100 pounds. So it's not really very portable. But that was kind of the option. If I was going to get a generator, I wanted to be able to do POTA and have the option to power anything in my home if I needed to as well on there. So that's kind of what I'm using when I go out and activate. I haven't done an activation here for a couple of months here now. I've been just busy with work here, but hope to get out this winter at some point here and get into a cabin and see about doing a few more activations. So, John, back over to you there, KE9BV.
Okay, Jeff. Let's see if I got it. Okay, Jeff. Thanks a lot for that. Yeah, so there, anyway, there you go. That gives you a whole spectrum of options that you can use. I'd like to call on one of the things that would be interesting to hear about here. Rick, W0ZAP, tell us about your largest bio-NO battery, capacity-wise, and what it can run, if you can, just for a minute.
This is Rick, W0ZAP, in Overland Park. When we started POTA back in 17, I bumped into Kevin, the guy that owns Bionno at Hamvention, and have met with him a few times over the years. In fact, I just talked to him the other day. We have a pair of Aussies that are coming in to attend this year's Hamvention, and they're flying into LA. And so I got all of Kevin and Got a fresh 40 amp hour sitting there waiting for those guys to come in and pick up. They're going to drive across the country from L.A. So that's that should be pretty interesting this coming year. As far as what I have a myriad of Biano products. I'm strictly Biano. I've used others, and to be honest, I just was blown away with the results of the Biano product and how it acts. And I'm sure there are others on the market that are equally powerful, but you dance with the one you came with, as far as I'm concerned. I have a three or four of the 4.5 that I power my monitoring system with. I have a 40 amp hour that I use to run my IC7300 ICOM with. And I have, as John alluded, I have a 100 amp hour that I use to power a inverter, which in turn powers a KPA500 from Elecraft. So if I want to, I can push as much as 500 watts while operating portable. That's the large one that I have. Now, as far as the standard Bionos that you might want to use with activating parks, John's on, like as he has alluded, on one end of the a spectrum where he goes light enough to backpack if he wanted to, although I'm not sure he really does that. I've seen his mom van that he drives around in. But for me personally, as far as antennas and power goes, I try to do it from my car. I enjoy sitting in the car and out here in the summertime, it gets pretty hot. And I'll let it drop for a sec. And so my antenna system is on the other end of the spectrum from the link dipoles and the infed halfways also. I use the Transworld antenna vertical dipole. And it's not cheap, but it's extremely effective, and it covers all bands 80 through 10. And so that's my antenna of choice. You can look at that at DX Engineering if you want to get some information about it, or email me. My email is good on QRZ. But the Biano batteries, in my opinion, are right up at the top of the list. I don't know if there's anything better. I would say no, but I'm sure there are others out there that have begun competition with them that probably offer performance on an equal par with them. But the 40 amp hour will run my 7300 as an example of what I'm talking about. It'll easily run my 7300 at full power output. For well over 8 hours, 10 hours, because I've done that during a state CUSO party. Out here in the middle of Kansas, it's a fur piece between units, and every time that we do the CUSO party, I do it exclusively from POTA units. And so I spend more time driving, actually, than I do on the year when I do that over a two-day period. But the battery will hold up and allow me to have full power output at 100 watt level for, like, as I said, 8-10 hours. Now, I do use a booster regulator or conditioner between the battery and the radio, and that's where I monitor. I have the smaller batteries that I power meters on both sides, both the battery side and the output of the booster regulator side. But the 100 amp hour is a beast. The 40 amp hour weighs about 10.4 pounds, and the 100 amp hour weighs, I think it's 20, I'm not sure. The smaller one I've memorized over the years because I've used it so much, but the larger one I can't remember. It's 20 or 24, something like that, but still a heck of a lot lighter than the lead acid equivalent. Back to you, John. W0ZAP. Back to that.
Okay, Rick. Let's see if I got it. Okay, Rick. Well, thanks for that. Good analysis there on the battery size, and I think once again, their KI5RHL. You have yet another option there for a portable all-band antenna, and you can get in touch with Rick if you want to find out more about the Transworld, or go to the DX Engineering catalog. You'll find it in there. Why don't we take one more battery question, if there are battery questions, and then I just want to circle back to the mast question there before we go to the closing check-ins. Any more battery questions? This is AB0O. Okay, I guess not. Let's see if I have it. Okay, so just circling back to the question that the station in Salt Lake City, Utah asked about packable masts. Well, I have one. Like Rick alluded to, I tend to have everything in my backpack. And quite frankly, I take offense at his comment that I don't really actually backpack, but I actually do. And as Rick will remember, I was the guy that took my backpack station and waded across a raging river in Wyoming to activate a U.S. island on the air. So that couldn't do that with a car battery on my back. All kidding aside, there are parks out there that you cannot activate from the parking lot because there is no parking lot in the park boundary. So there's no choice. You have to have something that you can carry with you into the park. Okay, enough said on that. Let's see. So masts, I have the SOTA beams, S-O-T-A beam, SOTA beam. Travel mast is 26 and a half inches, I believe, collapsed, and it's 32 feet long. It's very lightweight. I don't know that it weighs 2 pounds, if that. And it's very, very well made. They also make what they call a tactical mast. I think it's a little bit shorter, but again, it's packable. So it'll fit in a standard suitcase, or, you know, when I put it in my backpack, it kind of sticks out the top, but that's okay. It doesn't really matter, and it's very lightweight. So that's one option. There's also, if you want to go a little, the spider beam masts, the MFJ masts, Jack Tite masts, there's a variety of brands out there. They tend to be about 4 feet long when they're collapsed, so they're, yeah, you can pack them, and I have packed them. But the soda beams one, you know, fold down to something that fits in a backpack or in a suitcase, so that's what the best choice for backpacking a mast might be. I'll let it fall here. Okay, and the other question that came through on text as everybody was talking was a question about, well, John, we talked about antennas and masts and that sort of thing. What about coax? Well, just in a very short capsule here, I can talk about coaxes. So coaxes is basically, your choice of coax is largely up to you, and it's basically how much of it do you want to carry and how much weight do you want to carry. A lot. I would say that probably the majority of people that I've talked to or seen activated or activated with typically will go out to the field with, I don't know, 30 to 50 foot of RG8X, which is the RG8 that's a smaller diameter, quarter inch diameter. I've seen lots of people go out with full-sized RG8, it doesn't matter to them because they park the car, they just kind of take their stuff, carry their stuff 20 feet to the picnic table, and it's not a big deal. If you ask me, if you see me activate, I use RG174, which is the teeny tiny stuff. It's probably, I don't know, a little bit more than 3/32 of an inch or 1/16 of an inch in diameter. It's tiny. Some people say, well, it's higher loss, but you know what? At HF frequencies, at, you know, 7 megahertz and even 14 megahertz, the losses are really not that much greater than RG8. And, you know, it's 5 ounces of cable versus 2.5 pounds of cable. So that goes better in my backpack. So I think you can, you know, pretty much pick your coax based on, you know, how much weight you want to carry. And For POTA purposes, most of our coaxes are, you know, anywhere from 25 to 50 feet long, which loss-wise is not going to be huge at those frequencies. So that's what I can say about that. Are there any other questions on either antennas or batteries before we go to closing check-ins? This is AB0O. Okay, let me see if I have it. All right, very good. So let's start with closing check-ins. And once again, I'll take closing check-ins same way, your call, your name, and any topics you're curious about. We won't have time to go through those topics tonight, but what I do is I carry over topics for the next for next week. So, for instance, next week, I think we're going to talk about activating on digital modes. And once again, our friend Rick W0FH will give us a rundown. He's the expert on it. I have never done it, so I'm not your guy, but Rick is. So he'll talk to us about that. Next week, we'll talk about NFERS or 2FERS or 3FERS or 4FERS, that sort of thing. How do those work? And let's see, either next week or the week after, we'll talk about things like park permits, special use permits. I get questions about that. And then we'll talk about logging as well, which is a hot topic for both activators and hunters as well. So anyway, let's go to closing check-ins and give me your topics so I can tabulate them in my topic buckets and plan for next week's topics there. So closing check-ins, please come now.
This is K0HE. This is K0HE. Anybody around? K0HE.
Right now, so I can check you in, or we can chat after the net here. We'll be closing the net in a few minutes here if you can stand by for a little bit. This is AB0O.
AB0O, K0HE. We just wanted to check in real quick and don't want to hold you. We are in Bellevue, Nebraska, and running wires tonight. Over.
Okay, thanks for that. We got you checked in there, so appreciate the call. All right, any other closing check-ins for the POTA PetNet this evening? Come with your call sign, your name, and your topic of interest there. This is AB0O.
This is Kilo Delta Zero, Mike, Quebec Oscar. Frank, out in Lone Jack, just checking in for the numbers.
Okay, see if I got it.
Philip from North Kansas City, no questions.
Okay, Philip, X-ray, can you give me your full call again? I think I stepped on you at the beginning there.
This is Kilo Foxtrot Zero, Foxtrot X-ray, Philip from North Kansas City, no traffic.
Okay, I got you that time. KF0, Fox, X-ray, Philip in North Kansas City. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. All right, so let's go for last calls here for the closing check-ins. This is AB0O. Okay, let's see if I got it. All right, very good. So I think I'm going to close the net at this point. And like I said, we had lots of good check-ins, and just before I close, I just want to circle back here to Kilo India 5 RHL. I think you heard at least three options for your all-band HF antennas. Was that useful to you there? Please come back. Okay, let's see if I got it. Okay, maybe he isn't on anymore, so maybe we'll circle back to him next week. Okay, well, very good. Well, thanks very much, everybody, for checking in to the POTA PitNet. Once again, my name is John, Alpha Bravo Zero Oscar. My email is good on my QRZ.com webpage. This net is sponsored by the Raytown Amateur Radio Club in Raytown, Missouri. And the net happens every Monday night at 7 p.m. So next week on Monday night, we'll be here again at 7 p.m. And the topics for next week will be, like I said, digital operation, activation, and or hunting. Twofers, threefers, fourfers, all the N-fers, as I call them. How does all that work? Logging, and possibly talk about special park, special use permits, which is a good topic to discuss. And there's a few other satellite topics to that topic that we can that I think are useful to talk about. Otherwise, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for attending, and we will see all of you next week, hopefully on the net. And I will remain on frequency for a little bit after the net. If somebody has a follow-up question you want to casually chit-chat about parks on the air, antennas, batteries, whatever other topics, please let me know. Anyway, 73 to all. Have a good week, and we will talk to you next week, hopefully. This is John, AB0O, in Lee's Summit, Missouri, and returning the Kansas City wide room to regular ham traffic. 73.